Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to chat with author Patty Morelli. We're going to talk about her new book, Shielded Past. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very excited, my first show.
Well, it's very casual. We're just going to chat. I wanted to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, I'm 58 years old, and I've been writing for 30 years and finally had the courage to publish one of my books, and it's been a great experience. I'm married. My husband is disabled. I have three children that are grown. I'm grandmother of two. So I've lived a very full life, and now I feel like it's time for me to do what I want to do in my life.
That sounds like a really good plan. Did you enjoy writing this book? Was it cathartic?
Yes, it really was. It was therapy. It was a cleansing. I explained earlier I had done my first book under a pen name, and it was an autobiography memoir. And Shielded Past is my second book that I published, and this is published under my name. And it was I thought of the book years ago when I toured the grounds of the Marlborough Hospital. It was a psychiatric center, and I toured the grounds of the abandoned hospital. And I just came up with ideas, what I thought could have happened, wrote them, put them away, and 10 years later opened it up and wrote my book.
And one of the things I'm always interested in is what kind of books do you read, and does that have an influence on what you write?
Yeah, I always loved mystery and suspense. When I was really young, I used to subscribe to the Ellery Queen magazine where you would, you know, figure out who the murderer was, and that was one of my favorite things to do. Wasn't it great?
Yeah. I was young, they had a TV series with Jim Hutton that got me hooked on that.
Yes, him also. I watch that show every week. I just love mystery. And what I tend to do now is I'll watch, you know, what's supposed to be a mystery or read a book. And by maybe the fifth to sixth chapter, I'll know who the villain is. So I wanted to write with the element of surprise, that you have to read through the whole book before you realize who the villain is, you know, and also give them the reason for why a person would be mean. Because a lot of times you read something or you watch something and you see a person is doing something very mean to another person, but you don't know the reason for it. So in my book, I wanted to explain that, why the person did what they did.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing Agatha Christie was very good at, was giving a background on the villain. I mean, you don't see them, you know, the TV shows and stuff like that, but if you read the book, she's pretty good about explaining why they did what they did.
Yeah, because I don't believe people are just born mean, you know. Events in a person's life can change you. You could start off being a very good person, and then something happens, or maybe a series of misfortunes happen, and it gives you a dim view on life where somebody may have hurt you, and then you sort of seek revenge. So that's what I like to do. I like to make a character, but I want everybody understanding the character, maybe even loving the character to a point and then hating the character, or hating the character and then maybe just at least understanding the character, not loving them, but understanding them a little bit.
That makes sense. Do you have a particular favorite in your mystery reading life?
Of my character in the book or a mystery that I have read? I do like Stephen King, believe it or not. He's a little scary for me, but I do like him. And John Grisham I like also, because even though they're all about lore, there's an element of mystery in there, and you have to find the solution somewhere of, you know, with the court cases and everything, there's a good person, there's a bad person, so I like that also.
And what kind of... when you're reading in the street, do you like American? Do you like British? Do you like old classic? Do you like modern? Do you have a genre period?
I would say old classic, from the main reason is there aren't many gruesome details. They left a lot years ago. They left a lot to your imagination. The modern is very graphic, and I don't like to read graphic. You know, when somebody's being stabbed multiple times and blood gushing out of them, I like it to leave it to your imagination a little bit, and I believe that's what the old classics did. There are a few books out, you know, that do have it today, but more, they tend to go more into detail. And I think when you read, I like giving that little thought of imagination.
Yeah, I agree with that. I remember I was enjoying this book. I always try to reach out and try to get new books. And I was reading this book. I really enjoyed it until the end. And then it was the most bloody scene ever I had ever read in a book. And it was at the very end. And there were murders on the way, and they weren't very bloody. So it kind of fooled me. And then
right.
At the end, it was just bloodbath. And that I don't like. I mean, give a little clue of how you're, not how you're going to end it, but you know, that's going to, you know, have a scene that's bloody at the beginning or something just to give a clue.
If you look at the classic Psycho, you've never seen him actually stabbing. You know, you've seen the knife going down, you know, and it was one of the greatest scenes, you know, in a horror movie. And it left it to our imagination, and that's what reading and, you know, entertainment should be. I don't need to see the knife coming down and seeing it squirting everywhere on the shower curtains, on the walls. I don't need to see that, the person's face, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, there are some. I'm a big fan of the Franny Fisher books, and I do, even though his scenes are, there are some bloody scenes in it, I like Dan Brown. I just like the suspense that he brings.
Right.
You know, there are books I really, really like. But, yeah, that's true. I'm more of a British classic girl. I like Dorothy Sayers, Agatha Christie. That's more my cup of tea.
Yes. And I'm still romantic, where I love my Jane Eyre. Okay, so there's that side of you where, you know, I just, you know, it's a little bit, even in a suspense. I think the most important thing to me for a suspense is to make it suspenseful. Let you go get learn all the characters, and the idea that a writer can fool you and you really like this person, and then all of a sudden you're shocked by it. I think that's the most amazing thing a writer can do.
And if you look at Jane Eyre, really, Charlotte Bronte really did create a mystery in a way, because Rochester was the mystery of the book. It wasn't even Bertha who was the mystery. It was Rochester, because he was such a sweet, loving man, and yet there was something secret about him, and the way he tortured Jane at the beginning to see, you know, if she was real and stuff. Yeah,
right.
It was a mystery book, even though it was a romance.
Right, and you have your villains, even in romance.
And it wasn't pure gothic.
That's right. But also, even in your romances, you do have your villains, you know. So, and it's surprising, like, sometimes the person who doesn't look like the character you would like when they first come into the story. And I love when a writer gets you to like that character, you know. And the beginning of the story, you may not like them for the female character in the role, you know, in the part. Mm-hmm. And then I love when they could turn it around and this person becomes like her hero and somebody would never expect her to be. So even in a romance, you can have that suspense, you know, not just falling out right in love with somebody. Sometimes it's a person you don't know that you love. That's what I love in those books, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, it's funny because I fell in love with Jane Eyre. I've never read the book. I read it in college, and I fell in love with Jane Eyre, and I took a Bronte class. And so I've read all of them now. And,
right. Well, Pride and the Prejudice is my ultimate favorite.
Jane Austen. Yeah, I love Jane Austen, too.
You know,
but what
Pride and the Prejudice
say was...
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No,
I was going to say Pride and the Prejudice of the group. Of all her books. I'm sorry, we're going to start. Pride and the Prejudice was one of my favorite of all the books, okay? Because the intricacy of how, you know, she thought he was a snob and how they, you know, related to real life, you know, and you can take the situations of today, you know, someone with an education versus someone without an education, people who look down at other people and how she snubbed him, but yet she loved him. So I just thought Pride and the Prejudice was packed with so much, all the different characters.
Yeah, and it was funny, too.
Oh, it's very funny. It really is my favorite. They've done remakes, but it's still not as good as the Greer Garson version.
Yeah, I love the Greer Garson version because it has Greer Garson in Lawrence Olivier. The only thing is the end. Is the turnaround is completely different from the book.
Yes. But I like that little Hollywood put into it to just make everyone smile at the end, you know. That's what Hollywood does. They have their own interpretation of how a book should end, you know. The one was Gone with the Wind, look how they ended that, you know.
Yeah, well, Gone with the Wind is a weird topic because Gone with the Wind, I happen to love Vivien Leigh, so I am Clark Gable. I love both of them. Actually,
yes.
I like all the actors in the movie. I actually thought the movie Please Don't Write Me Letters was one of the most boring movies I've ever seen.
Did you?
I love Vivien Leigh, yes.
Really? I saw it as a young girl.
On.
I just loved it. Someone had taken me to it. It was one of my girlfriend's moms had taken me to the movie, and it was, you know, it came out in one of the Hollywood theaters in Manhattan, you know, with the red velvet seats and everything, and it was up in the balcony. And when Clark Gable came to the top, you know, he's at the bottom of the stairs, and Vivien Leigh came to the top of the stairs at that moment, because everybody, you know, the adults had seen the movie already, and everyone applauded. So I just fell in love with the movie because of the way I saw it. You know, it was, to me,
yeah.
It was instant love. I never saw Clark Gable before. I never saw Vivien Leigh, and it just took my breath away. So that's something that has always held dear to me. I read the book after I saw the movie, because I think I was only 8 years old when I saw it, you know.
Oh, well, that's different. You're only 8.
Yeah, I was very young, and when you see Clark Gable and you're an 8-year-old and his, you know, the masculinity of him, you know, and the beauty of her, you know, so it was my all-time favorite movie, but because I didn't read the book first. So when you read the book first and then you see the movie, that's, I can see how you can have a different opinion of it.
Yeah, so it's not, and like I said, I love both of them, so it's not them, it's just...
No, it wasn't
that.
No, it was the story. You know, it was a long movie.
Yeah.
It was, I think, it was 5 hours. I think it was 5 hours.
Yeah,
I know it was an intermission.
Like it was a ridiculous amount. But it's just not one of my favorites. I, if you're going to go with Vivien Leigh, there's so many better movies that she made, you know.
I know.
It's like Abel. Like, both of them. And Olivia de Havilland.
The actors were phenomenal.
That's
what it was.
Yeah.
You had so many, they did cast it very, very well, you know. But what they did is they said they made it more of a woman's movie. It was really Vivien Leigh's movie, you know. And everybody else would bit parts in it, and the movie was made specifically for her. But it showed in the time as a very independent woman. So I think that's why I'm drawn to that movie also, because all her heartaches and everything, she never gave up and she was strong. So it helps a lot of women who read that book to know, you know, find that scarlet inside of you and fight really hard, you know.
So that was a redeeming characteristic.
Yes.
For the book. Okay, so we're at the halfway point, so I want to talk about your book. Could you tell a little bit about Shield of Past and what you'd like the audience to take away from the book when they read it?
Okay. Shield of Past is about a woman who was raised in foster care. She marries the man of her dreams, buys her ideal home. The only problem with the home, it is adjacent to the abandoned Marlboro Psychiatric Center. When she first moves in the home, she sees a light coming from the hospital. No one's supposed to live there, so it's more of an investigation of where that light is coming from. She has a very good friend, Annie, who is a childhood friend since high school, and Annie stays with her at the weekends when her husband travels, and they see the light, and they start to investigate the light. Kate becomes pregnant and now wants to find a little bit about her past. So the story goes from there, where the both of them trying to find the source of the light and finding her past. And somewhere in the middle of the story, the paths do intertwine, the hospital light, and it goes on there to a suspense and a mystery of her past, who characters that have come in and were going back into the past of Kate's mother, why Kate's mother abandoned her at such a young age. It's reuniting with family. So it's a very, it's suspense and mystery. A little bit of horror is in there. but there's a lot of happiness in there also. So I think if anyone reads it, I think if anyone's like me that loves that surprise ending and be a little shocked, the reviews that I have received has said there was a lot of twists and turns in my story, and the ending was very surprising to them. So that's what I wanted the readers to take away from reading this book, and the reviews I'm getting are telling me that that has happened.
That's great. And are you going to be promoting it? Are you going to any book signings? Is there anything coming up you'd like the audience to know about, either online or in person?
I will. My problem is my husband is disabled, and he had a massive stroke in 2008, so I'm his sole caretaker. So I don't really have the freedom to pick up and travel. I'm trying to do something that'll be four times a year where I can do a book signing, maybe in New York at Javits Center when there's a book fair, one in Miami. So the bigger events, I'm going to try to do them and then just try something local. I come from New York, New Jersey, and I'm in Florida now. So it's easier for me to stay on the Northeast right now to promote the books. And I don't have any dates yet for signing, but I will post them on my website and on Twitter, Facebook, and where's my other one? Pinterest, okay. I do all of them. I just try to get it out there anywhere where I will be doing a book signing, but I don't have any dates as of yet.
Okay. And I ask this question a lot, especially as a new author. When you got your book, was it like Christmas?
Yes, it was. Well, I think the best exciting part of this was I have two girlfriends who were my editors on this book. And while I wrote the book many years ago, while I wanted them to help me with the editing on it, it was a great experience connecting with friends. And we basically picked up different characters and became those characters. So writing the book was such a great thing for all three of us. So when the book was published, it wasn't just me excited. It was both my girlfriends who have been my friends over 30 years. So we're like a family now, you know. They helped me, and we see it in print. And it's just an amazing feeling.
Yeah, it's the best thing when you open that box and you see your book.
Yes.
And
the first
time you have solid evidence of it.
Yes, and I think it's your first honest review, not a review by friends, all right? It's when a stranger reviews your book and understands your characters, falls in love with the characters you want them to, hate the characters you want them to, and truly understand what you wrote. I think that's the biggest reward of writing, is you're relating to people and they're understanding your thoughts. As writers, we have all these crazy thoughts that go through our mind, you know, and I can tell a story, but can I write the story? And that's basically what my book did for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's something that we all go through. It's one of the tortures of being a writer.
Yes.
That is fighting with your characters to do what you want them to do and they don't want to do it.
Yes. Well, I tell my people, I call them my people in my mind, you know, and they're my people. I call them my people. My girlfriend says I sound crazy saying that. I said, no, but when you get into writing, it's exactly actually like they're talking to you, telling you what to say and giving you different ideas. I know it's all within your own mind, but when you get absorbed like that and you write so well when you get into that moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because when you have them be real in your head, they're so much more real on the page.
They really are. And if you have somebody who's your editor, I think your editor is what you need the most, is a very good editor that understands you and understands where you want to go with your book. And,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a very important thing, is that understanding that you can work well together. You know, it's one thing to have it done grammatically correct and everything, but they can't take away your feelings of your characters. They have to stay. Even if somebody disagrees with them, you have to stand strong and say, nope, this is my character, this is where I want my character, and then just hope you're right when it's in print.
Yeah, that's true. Are you... other than writing, do you have a passion for anything in particular?
Well, I like poetry. I write some poetry. I have a collection of poetry on my website, and it's over 30 years of writing for different times in my life or people that I've known, heartaches and stuff. So I've written various poems, and writing poetry is just like a cleansing. You know, it's a little poem, get a little thought out. It's not like writing a book. You know, a book you have to be you have to be structured, you know, make yourself. But a poem you could just write and just doesn't have to make any sense. It just makes sense to you. So that's why I like poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, poetry is how I express when I'm upset. That's what I use it for.
It's a very good tool. It's a very good tool.
When my friends and family who read my poetry, they thought I was really upset all the time. No, no, that's how I get it out.
Yes. Well, I had written a poem years ago, and it was about a child, you know, not wanting, a child not being wanted. And it was written over 30 years ago, or 25 years ago. And I joined a few poetry groups on Facebook, and I had posted the poem. Well, there was so much discussion over the poem all day long. People writing different things. I hope this didn't happen to you. And then finally I had to write that she had the child and he's a man now. And everybody was just so relieved that the way the poem was written, they didn't know if she had the child or not. And it just made everybody so relieved. And I couldn't believe that many people connected to just one poem. It was over 25 people. And it was a great feeling.
Yeah. It's always fun. What's your fan interactions been like when both online and in person when you met some of your fans for your writing and your poem?
It's been amazing. It has been amazing, and it's bringing my confidence up every time someone reads the book or reads my poetry. The compliments, the conversations they have with me, they're excited about my book or they're excited about a poem that I wrote. It builds your confidence up to write more because you are affecting people. You know, if it's, you know, in the book, it was more of keeping the interest. Like one woman told me, I'm totally bored with reading. She goes, but your book brought me back to where I was years ago. You know, she said, I remember years ago when Thornbirds was written, you know, and everybody talked about it. You know, it was like the big thing to do. Everybody who was reading Thornbirds, and they'd be on the ferry going to work talking about it. She goes, that's how I feel your book was. And I said, well, I don't believe my book is the Thornbirds. She goes, no. She goes, it's just going back to that time in my life. She said that I loved a book and I just wanted my friends to read it so I can talk with them about it. So it's a great compliment I think any writer could receive.
Yeah, it's fun because when you meet a fan, they're like, fans seem to think you're special, which you don't. So you
right.
have this weird dichotomy because they're like, you get nervous, you're excited, and you're like, I'm just with you. Calm down. It's okay.
Well, it's just, I have a big mouth in business, but when it comes to my writing, I'm very shy about it, and it's a very personal thing. So it's very hard now when you know, put it public, and now people want to discuss it with you, and how did you come up with this character, and how did you do this, and how did you do that? And it's like, I don't know. It's just in me, and I can't explain it to someone. Because writing is very personal to every person that writes, you know, there's that personal note. So it's very, very hard to speak about it to people. And I know they want to ask, you know, 100 questions on how did you come up with this character, how did you come up with the location. And it's a very hard thing to explain to people. You know, it's just something that feels right when you're in at that moment when the idea comes to you. So writers, it's very, unless you're another writer, you know, I can speak with another writer without a problem. They understand me. But just on a fan point of view, it's sometimes like you're repeating yourself over and over again. You know, like, I, you know, it just comes to me. And sometimes they want a better answer than that, and I don't have one.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that you kind of understand their side because you're a fan too. So
yes.
they want to get to, it's not that they really want to, at least with me when I'm a fan of someone, I don't want to dissect them. I don't want to become their best friend or anything. I just want to understand the way their mind ticks. So
yes.
I don't think they want to know, well, what is your way of writing? They want to know, what's your emotion when you're doing it more than they want to know how you sit down at the desk and you put your hands on the computer keys and you start typing. But,
right.
You know, they don't want to know that.
But it's very funny when people say these things, and you go, well, I just came up with it. I was walking in the hospital, and I got this crazy feeling. It was a horrible hospital, you know, it was abandoned. It was. They demolished it today. It's no longer there. But when you've seen something that's been vacant for over 10 years, and then you look and you see the chairs, you know, and your imagination just goes wild of what could have happened in here? You know, so it was a great setting for me, you know, to be standing there in these hallways and there was underground tunnels. So it just opens up your mind to so many things that could have happened. And then you have to fight with yourself, saying, no, that can't happen. You know, now you're getting too crazy. Come back to reality. You know, you're actually talking to yourself. You have to bring yourself back to all your ideas that come into your head.
I sometimes dream them. Do you dream some of your storyline?
Yeah, it happened to me. Well, that's what I was going to say before. What happens, well, most of the fans, they want to know when the second book is coming out. They want a sequel. And
yeah.
I told them, I said, I wrote it, but I'm not ready to publish it yet because I want to make sure I don't want to just rush into a second book. I want it to be perfect for me, you know, before I publish it. And I know they want to read the sequel to it, you know. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to wait till next year because I have to make sure my characters are there. So it was, as you were saying the other night, I was, you know, working on the second book and I'm working on another project. And I don't call it sleep. I don't know what you call it. Your eyes are closed. You think you're sleeping. And then you have all these people talking into your head telling you this would be a really great idea. And you don't want to get up to get yourself out of the sleep to write it down. So I don't know if you ever had that before.
Yeah, I have.
Right, and you don't want to get up to go get that pen, and I sit there and I go, I promise I'll remember tomorrow. I promise I'll remember tomorrow, and I'll write it down. It's a very good idea.
Oh, yeah. And I've had that happen. In fact, some of my best stories came that way.
Well, I think it's because you're in a rested state because, you know, my life, I own my own business. I take care of my husband. So that's basically the only time I really get to think is, you know, when you're going to sleep. You know, it's when you're rested. And I believe that's when the creative flow starts coming, when you're in that state of total rest, you know. Because when you do start writing, you're not rested anymore. You go into a different mode, you know, and you want to get your characters down. You want to get the ideas down. So it's like an adrenaline rush, you know. You're rushing with all your ideas. You want to make sure you get them on paper. So I think that's the only time we can probably get those ideas is just before we go to sleep.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know.
Sadly, Patty, we're at the end of the show. I want to thank you for being on the show. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Thank you very much, and I did enjoy myself. And you have a great day.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you again. Bye now.
Thank you.